You're listening to The Break Breakdown. I'm Benjamin Shaw, in for Courtney Romano, who today will join the conversation as a guest. Let's play catch up. In January 2021, we read the Kinsley versus script out loud for the first time. 9 months later, in October 2021, we filmed the first three episodes of the series. You may recall that we filmed in two rounds because raising money to shoot the entire series was a bigger challenge than we expected. But rather than waiting until we had all the money, we decided to shoot the first three episodes, hoping that we could use footage from those episodes to fundraise for the remainder. And that's what happened. Now I'm going to take us to January 2022, when we were scheduled to film episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7. Filming the first three episodes was an exciting, intense experience. We were a new team and we were finding our way. In retrospect, the big achievement of round one was that it happened. Round two was challenging, but this time we knew the lay of the land and we were choosing to return. So let's welcome back our writer and director, Courtney Romano. And also I'd like to introduce you to Ian McKay, our DP for episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7. Welcome, you guys.
Thanks, Benj.
Thanks for having me.
I think it's important for our audience to know a little about where you are in your own career versus Courtney and me, who are the seniors of this trio. So tell us a little about when you arrived in New York and what brought you to New York.
After graduating from the North Carolina School of the Arts, I moved up to New York. I came up here to pursue the art of filmmaking, to be a cinematographer. Currently, I'm working as a cinematographer on the side and an electrician slash gaffer on other projects. But I'm just happy to be in New York living and working on films.
And one of the cool things about the team that worked on this project is that everybody comes from a different place and a different set of experiences. Courtney, I know you've spoken about this. Courtney had about 10 years as an actor before she shifted her focus to filmmaking. I come to this as a producer and primarily as a theater director. The thing about you, freshly out of school or recently out of school, is that you identified a long time ago at the beginning that you wanted to be a DP.
Growing up, I was always attracted to the visual arts. I'm dyslexic. My brain is wired towards a very visual and physical way of learning and being. When I was younger, picking up a camera or anything like that, it was just intuitive for me to depict visuals and art and emotion. So that kind of naturally led me into a path in the arts. And then I went through theater and then realized that wasn't as tactile and hands-on as me. And then I kind of landed on filmmaking and specifically the camera.
I'm going to scoop this right now. What musicals were in high school?
I was a techie.
I should have known.
Yeah.
Courtney, we were, as I said at the beginning of this episode, we were midway through the process of creating Kinsley versus at least the filming component. Tell me about your creative experience.
Well, a lot of things happened between round one and round two. We lost an actor because he got a huge tour, which was great. So we haven't talked about this, but we recast that. And then the person we recast in that role got sick the week of the shoot. And then we recast it again with Matt DeLalle. So we recast an actor twice. We also started our public fundraising campaign, which is its own production. And our cinematographer on the first round, Alexa, she had conflicts with the dates that basically worked for everyone else to be on set. And so she had to bow out of the second round. Emotionally, I was really stable and secure. That's sarcasm. It was day to day. We were making changes and trying to piece everything back together as best we could. And Alexa, in total graciousness, had recommended Ian. And so I thought, well, I love our team. And if they love Ian, I'm sure I'm going to love Ian. So I reached out to Ian and we hopped on a call. One of the important things to me as a director working with a cinematographer is that we don't have to be the same, but we have to like get each other and come at it from a point of view where we can, where we're speaking the same language. I come from a very, as you mentioned, being an actor, coming from a narrative kind of directing position where there are some directors who come from a technical position. some directors who have worked a lot as a DP or cinematographer or in that technical aspect and then moved into directing. And that's not me. So in looking for a collaborator in that director of photography position, I was looking for someone who could understand my narrative drive and my narrative obsession and then tell me what was possible and tell me what wasn't possible and tell me what I could do instead. Also teach me and not be annoyed with me asking questions or not get frustrated with the fact that I don't have the same knowledge base. And when Ian and I met and we were talking, you know, Ian, one of the things that struck me about you and why I was so excited to work with you and felt so grateful that we were on the same team together, I think it's really a gift and needs to be like underlined and treasured when you find people who are enthusiastic about creating something with you, because things are going to be hard always. They're inevitably difficult, you know? And so your level of enthusiasm, and I remember telling you some things, some technical things that I did want to do, like the one take, for instance, in episode 7. And I was like, you know, these were the concerns with it. And this is what, you know, could potentially happen. And I started kind of backing myself into a corner. And I remember you saying, that sounds fun. Let's figure it out.
How do you know when someone is the right partner? I think there's a lot of times where it's very clear when the person's wrong because you don't get along, you don't feel understood. But how do you know when they're right? Ian?
The first indication usually comes down to the first time that we're talking about the project and whether like my ideas and thoughts are being considered and being listened to, which I think is very important because we are collaborators. We, like Courtney said, we're spending a lot of time and we are like, I look after the visual language of the film. And if I say, hey, I don't think that is going to get you to where you want, and they're going to fight me on it. Of course, it's their vision, but it's kind of that level of give and take of where we kind of sit in that sliding scale. Obviously, I'm not going to be 100% of the time right, but probably neither are they. So I think it's just that lenience and that ability to work and compromise with each other that's really important.
I want to remind or share with our listeners that in episode 3, we were speaking with the costume designer and we were talking about how every moment in film is a collaboration between various departments. For the sake of this conversation, I think it's really important to understand that the director and the DP are talking the entire shooting day about every single moment, and you can never call action without a substantial amount of conversation happening between those two people. There are two sets of the same eyes, if that makes sense, right? They're both looking at the same thing and they're both bringing slightly different variations of understanding to that thing. Ian, were you ever hesitant because we were in the middle of filming and you thought, I don't want to jump into something that I don't have ownership over in its entirety?
No, I think that when I first talked to Courtney, Courtney had such a good grasp on what she wanted out of the visual language that was incredibly comforting. Like, it wasn't able to see any of the footage from the first 3 episodes, but as soon as we got into talking about the scripts and certain episodes, Courtney knew it's like a moment that I would like a slow zoom or this very specific aspect. And I knew that although I wasn't here for the entirety of it, that Courtney's voice was going to be. And that's more important than me having ownership or me having creative control of the entire thing. It's that I know that Courtney has a vision and I am here to help her execute that. And I felt like we were such a good match that it was a great project to come in and to start work on that.
How does director of photography prepare?
I'm a big proponent of the phrase, it's not about the plan, it's all about the planning. And that comes from Francis Ford Coppola. He has a Godfather Bible. But I think that as long as the prep process is in depth, and it's not even just about the technical parts of it, it's about breaking down the script, breaking down what the point of each scene is, where the turn is. If you have that all together, you can get onto set and so many things can be thrown at you. But if you have that knowledge behind you, it is so much easier to improvise while educated than it is to try to stick to a plan that isn't going to work.
I realize I don't know the answer to the next question. Did you look at episodes 1, 2, and 3 before you joined
us? No, I did not.
Courtney, was that intentional on your part?
No. I think if I had been able to get it to you, I would have. But we did have footage being cut by the editor. So it might have been that we didn't have the hard drive on us. And that's why. Because I feel now I'm like, of course I shared that footage with you. Of course I did. You're like, no, you certainly did not.
It's funny too that sometimes what seems like obvious steps are skipped because in the midst of all that's happening, you just forget. And we were asking Ian to jump on quickly and to make a full commitment. And possible, Ian, maybe that even you didn't ask. And I guess I'm pointing this out for our listeners because to your quote earlier, your Godfather Bible quote, like there is a logic to all of this and there is an irrationality to all of it at the same time, often in the same breath. So if you're looking for everything to go as planned in the right order, you're getting into the wrong field. But if you can embrace the fact that there's something helter-skelter and yet completely logical, if it's done well about that helter-skelterness, then you're inside a field that will welcome and embrace you because you need to be flexible.
And I feel like in the role of DP, you're pulled in a lot of different directions. So finding a crew that you can trust and to know that you're going to speak the same language, that if I ask for this, Jacob knows I mean this. If I tell Katie to do this, she's going to prep, you know, options because I'll probably go to those things.
Let's go to episode 4, which happened to be shot in my somewhat small Upper West Side apartment. And I'm curious what the two of you remember about that day in particular, because that was the day you guys started working together.
I remember feeling like we hadn't done anything between shooting episode 3 and episode 4. It felt to me like, all right, we're back on set, even though the world beneath our feet had shifted 17 different times. It felt like, for me, from my perspective, we had most of the same team together as far as like the cast and our wardrobe and producers, a lot of familiar faces on set. It was also really exciting for me to fold in our new team and feel that energy. And then also getting feedback from the people who had been on set before being like, you know, Ian's really great, or like this team is really great, and people being excited. So I actually, for all of the money I spent on therapy between the two shooting sessions, I felt really good. Like it felt really good to me. And it felt very nice to just start off on a positive foot. And I think episode 4 in particular of Kinsley is maybe the most straightforward one we could have even done. It's like a lot of over the shoulder stuff. So we kind of could work out our language in a less kind of intense, hectic shooting environment.
I think the start of the day was stressful and then it very quickly eased away. I think it was small and constrained, but you're right. It only was one setup. And then once we got that, it was kind of fun for me and you to live in. And I felt like you and the cast felt like we were almost immediately friends. When problems arose, it was very easy to chat and talk about how to fix it or why something wasn't working. So it was a great way to start everything, get introduced to it, and just kind of find our legs before we kind of moved into these bigger scenes.
We have to take a quick break, but after this, I'm going to ask Courtney and Ian about shooting episode 7, which is the final episode in the series and was filmed in a single take. Stay with us.
This episode of The Break Breakdown is brought to you by Diamond Dogs, the greatest bar in the universe. That's what Instagram says, and we wholeheartedly second that statement. Located in the heart of Astoria, Diamond Dogs serves perfectly crafted cocktails behind an unmarked door on 31st Avenue. It's the quintessential, if you know, you know, spot. My favorite cocktail is the Mezcal Margarita, and Diamond Dogs is BYO food, so I love to grab milk flour pizza from next door and then pair it with their wide variety of seasonal craft beers. A moment on the vibe, which is romantic and moody, so it's perfect for a date. And since you can spread out from the bar to the booths to the backyard, it's also ideal for birthday drinks for you and your 35 best friends. Diamond Dogs is located on 31st Avenue and 34th Street in Astoria. For more details, check them out on Instagram at DiamondDogsNYC. And yes, there are two back-to-back Ds in that, at DiamondDogsNYC. Instagram and the Break Breakdown are aligned. Diamond Dogs, the greatest bar in the universe.
Courtney, you had a vision for episode 7. Will you let us into your imagination for what was going on inside that? Where does that all come from?
Okay, so episode 7 is the final episode of the series. And so I guess this isn't really a spoiler or anything because people have presumably watched it by now. But if you haven't watched it, go watch it and then come listen to this. But episode 7 is Kinsley sitting at a kitchen table trying to write. That's her entire action. But what happens around her is all of her thoughts are in a conversation, a fight, a strategy session, and what I ultimately titled writer's room. And I wanted to depict this moment in her story of what it actually feels like to write. And I wanted to visually represent that as your body is still, but your mind is in absolute utter chaos and destruction. That's just my writing process. I'm sure other people are healthier than me, but that's what I wanted to depict in Kinsley. And when I was thinking about, when I first wrote it, I did not have the idea for a one take. It was literally just, I heard the dialogue, I heard the banter. As I started prepping, as I started editing the script and getting more clarity on the script and the trajectory and where I wanted it to go and how I wanted the series to end, I realized, it's not only about the language, it's about how the audience, the viewer, is experiencing the language. There's like a double layer here. And I was really inspired by, funny enough, the opening of Reservoir Dogs. The opening is a bunch of these like con men sitting around a table at a diner talking. There are all these conversations kind of going over and under each other. Sometimes you see the face of the person talking, sometimes you don't. There's this kind of like swirly, gooey, you know, unkempt atmosphere of just energy. And I was thinking about that and I thought that's exactly what I'm trying to depict with language. But if we do it visually too, I think we're so much closer to expressing what that final moment is that I want to express. So I had that Reservoir Dogs idea in my head. I wanted, if we could, to shoot the entirety of episode 7, which is 8 minutes long, as a one take.
And just to be super technical, Ian, tell our listeners what a one take is and what it entails.
In today's terms, one take is usually a shot that is perceived as one take. It is a no cut, single clip look that is supposed to carry and drive the energy through the entire shot or the entire scene.
Your average show that you're streaming or seeing wherever you watch content, how often do we cut? How often does an editor cut between shots?
Really, if you sit down and really look at it, every couple of seconds, you're flipping to a new angle.
And so for you, Ian, how ambitious is an 8 minute single shot?
8 minutes is definitely a very ambitious task to tackle. But there's something incredibly organic about pushing and moving through all these characters, all these frames in this one take. So when me and Courtney started to talk about it, we really had to tackle the logistics of it, which is not something that I want to get caught up in when thinking about how to cover a scene. I think that it was really important for us to do exactly what we want and then to do exactly what we want and what's going to serve the story and then cater around that. So at first we tried hidden cuts, which we set up, I think, into thirds, and we kind of blocked, rehearsed all of that when we would shoot that one at a time so that we kind of had each section as we wanted it throughout. And then at the very end, we kind of looked at each other and we were like, should we go for it? And the first, 8 hours of the day served as our rehearsal. And at that point, it was second nature. So we were just able to actually do it in a one take, which to my body's chagrin, we did. But I think it was worth it. I think it felt natural. It felt present. And I think I couldn't be happier with the outcome.
And I just want to add in here, Ian said to me, let's do a Hail Mary. And I said, what do you mean a Hail Mary? What do you mean? And he said, let's do it. Let's see if we got it. And what was so exciting about ending the day on the one take was that I knew we had it if we didn't get the one take. I knew we had it in each section that we had previously done. I was happy with what we had. I knew that we could do those hidden cuts so it would look like a one take, even if it wasn't technically all three parts strung together. So when we started doing that final take, we're getting through it and I'm like, oh, that's good. And I'm watching over Katie's shoulder on the monitor. And I'm like, oh, that part landed. Oh, look what Ian did there. Oh, that's amazing. We got all the way through to the end. And I was like, oh my God, we got it. So excited. And so I'm sitting there literally in my hallway closet with Katie looking at this monitor of what Ian's doing in the kitchen. And I just couldn't believe it. Also to your benefit, Ian, which I think is important to say, how heavy a camera is and how long 8 minutes is. After doing three separate rounds of that same shot. And I think to your professionalism and your credit, you did say to me in that conversation too, you said, I've got one in me. And I said, I'll take it and I will be grateful for it. And I won't ask for anything more. Even though there was pressure because we were energized to get it right, we didn't have to get it right. And I think that kind of set up the space for it to be so exciting and alive and, you know, exactly what you want when you're trying to create that one take feel.
Ian, I'm so impressed by this moment that Courtney describes, particularly the second when you said, I have one in me.
Something that really like rallied me is when Courtney came into the actors and she was like, hey, we're going to go for the whole thing. They were all shocked. And then just like the excitement that came over the room, the entirety of the house pretty much was like, okay, let's do this. And I think that really amps me up to get to the point where like, okay, I got this. And I remember like that last final frame of Kinsley at her computer. I was like trying not to shake as much as I could. And I heard Courtney yell cut and I just like fell down and everyone cheered. And we knew that we had gotten it at that point. So no, the crew and my collaborators, I think if I did not have those specific people on set that I might not have been able to do.
Ian's clarity with that was so comforting to me. Even if he had said to me, Courtney, we can't do it for X, Y, and Z, and it had been clear like that, it's all comforting. It's all, let's get on the same page, be on the same page about it and make team decisions. When he said, I can do this, I knew he could. And I knew where his line was. And I knew I'm going to do everything that I can to support him in this moment because I know it's our last moment.
Ian referenced you walking into the actors, which we haven't spoken about that much today. But as a director, how much were you including the actors in the reality of what you guys were trying to achieve?
I had told them previously, because what we had done was when we had some downtime on set, I would go through the script with the actors of episode 7 and we would mark the beat shifts. And I was very specific in saying to them, these beat shifts are the cuts, the visual cuts that we would be seeing if we were shooting this in like a typical way. So we need to land these. So the actors and I worked on that in a narrative, actorly sense. And they knew that the goal was a one take. And then they knew at the start of the day, we were saying, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to do these hidden cuts and we're going to do three sections. And I think they knew that even if we were doing three sections divided by 8, that's still like a lot of dialogue and a lot of blocking. And it's not a short scene. So they were used to that. And I think because I'm an actor, I want to go to the actors first and be like, beautiful. Yes. Like, yes. And, you know, X, Y, Z, because I know how vulnerable it is to be in front of a camera or on stage and feel like, am I alone out here? So I would go in and tell them like, we got it. We got it. Everything is fine. You guys are doing great. But this is what we're going to try this time. Okay. But don't worry. We have it. We have it. So I think when we came in at the end, I think I used Ian's language. I said, we're going to do a Hail Mary. And I said to them, we're going to do the one take, but we have it. So I don't want you to worry. I want you to have fun. I said, the camera might move a little bit differently because we can move a little bit differently. So be aware of that. But just have a good time and know that it's okay. We have it. No pressure. And that was my main point to them.
I think talking with crew, like you kind of talk with the actors, like Katie was at the monitor, but she was also pulling our Zoom. So she was as much of a part as finding these frames as I was. So during those rehearsals, or during those like thirds, going up and being like, hey, like what you did, that was great. I loved that. Like maybe this part could be a little bit different, or I want to go for this bit, and like working on that, being very complimentary. I think it's very important with your crew. Your crew is there for you. But I think same thing with the Hail Mary. It's like, all right, Katie, I trust you. Like we've been doing this, but if you feel like there is something that you want to do, go for it. Like we'll work together. We're in two different rooms, but it's still a dance. We're intertwined at that point. So I had to shout her out. She did a wonderful job. Like that shot would not have happened without her.
Amen to that.
Last questions for both of you. Ian, what are you currently recommending?
For Friends, I would definitely recommend Triangle of Sadness. I think it is probably the best movie this year. I think Everything Everywhere All at Once, earlier half of the year, fantastic, also up there. But there's something about like, I don't know, seeing Triangle of Sadness in a theater felt very special. How you see a movie is equally as important as what the movie is. You know, you get a movie like this every once in a while. And I feel like it is definitely worth everyone going and seeing. It can be a lot sometimes, but I think it's very poignant in what it is saying. And it is just an absolute good time. I was cackling the entire time.
Courtney, same question.
And I just keep telling people to go watch Severance if they haven't seen it yet. It's so long ago. But it made such an impact on me. Visually, it made an impact. Storytelling, it made an impact. Even just the way that they shot it and split up who was directing, everything about it. So I feel kind of lame and like super millennial just being back in early 2022. But I'm still recommending Severance.
I want to thank Ian McKay and Courtney Romano for joining this conversation today. Ian, as a producer of the series and of this podcast, thank you again for your work. And to our audience, thank you for listening and for sharing with your friends. Keep sharing. Every single listen helps us grow. Just a reminder that we are not done yet. A last word on process starts now.
My name is A.B. Brown, and I'm a performance artist, writer, and professor of contemporary performance. And one project I'm currently working on is called Ceremony 332, in which I try to create a small everyday ritual to commemorate every trans person who's killed by transphobic violence, at least on record. And I'm hoping that this project contributes to shifting the way we commemorate, celebrate, and mourn the loss of these lives away from kind of victimhood, sensationalized narratives, and more towards a structural critique about why trans communities and specific trans communities, often trans communities of color, trans women of color, are more vulnerable to violence and early deaths. And one area I often get stuck in this project and in many is in the area of what I often call over-preparation, where I'm trying to anticipate every potential critique that might be thrown at this project and account for those critiques before I've even created anything to put out into the world. And so one of the things I've been trying to do to address and confront that block is to shift the way I think about feedback and the way I think about the timeline of projects. And so first, I think about feedback embedded throughout the creative process so that I'm constantly in communication with both communities most affected by this project and also with potential audience members, right? So surrounding myself with friends or perspectives who might encounter this work. And I try to hopefully do that from a broad range of perspectives. And then I also think about feedback as an ongoing process after the project is kind of released into the world. And so this requires a little bit shifting of my own creative expectations from one in which you know, I am producing something that's perfect or the best iteration of itself the first time, and actually thinking about, well, what if this project is put out into the world, receives feedback, and then I get to work on it further and make it better. And this I find really helpful for shifting my own expectations of my own self as an artist and my creative process, so that it becomes more about how do am I getting better and better with each project and each iteration of this project? How do I resist the kind of productivity models that insist that we're constantly producing new work and at its highest caliber? And how do I start to build communities that really value growth over kind of shutting down or critique that really limits, I think, projects?
Today's episode of The Break Breakdown was hosted by me, Courtney Romano. It was executive produced by Benjamin Shaw, with audio and music supervision from Matt Zimmerman. It was produced by Sarah States and created by me, Courtney Romano. Season 3 of The Break Breakdown is made possible through the generous support of Eddie and Wendy Shaw, with special thanks to Craig and Elle Hansen. And don't forget, you can watch the full series of Kinsley Versus now on YouTube. Just go to the show notes for the link. The Break Breakdown is a project of Queensbird Films.